Reality.
Welcome to episode 14. We're not even close to that. Wow, I don't know where I got 14 from. This is episode 4.
There you go.
5? One of those two.
Four.
4 or 5. I don't remember. But we're gonna be talking about something a little bit on the darker side, which realistically, it's all gonna be kind of a dark subjects, but today we're going to be talking about cults, and specifically we're going to be talking about one of the weirdest examples that I can think of like how many people are brainwashed and are believing this BS. Mm-hmm. We're going to be talking about Jonestown. Yep. Now, for those of you who are unaware, I know a little bit about Jonestown. Haley's kind of the expert here. She seems to be kind of like, you know, taking the reins with this one. I just know that, dude, this guy, Jim Jones, bro, he had like this whole, I don't want to call it compound. He had like a whole town of his, basically. He had a whole town, you know, mm-hmm. Jonestown, no pun intended. But he convinced like 1,000 people to commit suicide.
Yep. It was 918 specifically,
how,
I believe.
Now, how do you get that many people on board at the same time? How do you find that many crazy people?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, and I pretty much researched this all day today because there's a lot of information on Jonestown on the internet, like, you know, the basics about it, like what happened and all that, but I had a little bit more digging to do when it came to finding out, like, how did this one person, Jim Jones, cause all of this?
Right. Now, Jim Jones, his actual, like, town, I guess you could say, or like his compound, it was called the People Temple, the People's Temple or something like that. Is that what it's called? Was it the cult name or just like where it was?
That was so
because I know Jonestown is like the informal name for it.
Yeah, so that was so basically, and we'll talk about this more later, but he founded like his own church pretty much, and that's what the church was called, is the People's Temple.
Yeah, right.
I don't know. Should we start with an overview or should I start giving details?
I think we should start with just Jim Jones himself and just talk about like his, you know, his life.
Okay.
Like so how this he got is to, you know, the Kool-Aid killer, as I call him.
Okay. Wait, why do you call him that?
Wasn't it Kool-Aid? Didn't he like give people like
Kool-Aid?
So the Kool-Aid killer.
Okay. So this is what I spent pretty much all day researching because, you know, I wanted to know more. Like, I wanted to know why, what made this one person do this? How does one like grow up and be like, yeah, I want to fucking lead a cult?
Yeah, you know? No kidding.
So I'll just kind of start with some details and like an overview of the man himself, Jim Jones, founder of Jonestown. So he was born May 13th, 1931 in Indiana in a little rural town or whatever.
Indiana, man, I tell you.
Fucking weird people there. No offense.
I mean, unless you're from there, then it's awesome.
Yeah, right? So what I found, according to my research, is that he was kind of known as the weird kid growing up. And we all know those people from school. Like, we all know the weird kid. And the reason why people kind of thought he was weird is because apparently, according to his peers, like the kids in school or whatever, he had a weird obsession with religion and death. Now, I didn't find any examples as to, like, what they meant by that, but that's just what I found. So apparently, according to his childhood, like acquaintances and stuff like that, he frequently held funerals for small animals on his parents' property that he killed, and he even once stabbed a cat to death.
Jesus Christ.
Which, isn't that like a telltale sign of somebody becoming like a serial killer or something like that?
No, so there's been plenty of research done, like, if you have like a weird fascination with like a hurting animals as a young adult, that's definitely going to translate to, what you're gonna like, definitely there's something wrong in your head. Like, for example, Jeffrey Dahmer, he had like, his dad was a chemist, if I remember correctly, and he had a fascination with like dissecting like rodents, I think.
Ooh.
And his dad, his dad trying to be a supportive father was kind of, I wouldn't say encouraging it, but he kind of was. kind of encouraging this habit. So instead of him like telling him, like, oh, you're weird, blah, 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 you know, you're a crazy person for doing this and like, and shunning him for it. He was kind of like, yeah, you have a fascination with like how different, cause like I said, he was a chemist. So like how different chemicals were affecting different like biological, you know, beings and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that obviously, you know, didn't age well, but yeah. Okay. So there's definitely research that's been done and definitely tons of examples of serial killers or, you know, what have you, where you had like just this weird fascination with like either abusing animals or abusing other people at such a young age. It's really odd.
Right. There's so many stories where like, you know, future serial killers or school shooters even and things like that have been found to do shit like that in their childhood.
Right.
So now, obviously there's a lot of weird parts of the story, but one thing that I found really fucked up is according to one of his childhood acquaintances, it was noted that after German prisoners of war arrived in the town that he was from in Indiana during World War II, one of the prisoners of war patted Jones on the back of his head, and he responded by giving a Nazi salute and yelling, "Hail Hitler."
Oh, my God.
Which, listen, I found all this shit on a bunch of different websites, so of course I don't know if any of this is true, but I'm just throwing it out there. So, kid was fucked up and apparently had a thing for Nazism, I guess.
I guess.
But the story gets so much more weird. So, one thing that was... So keep this in mind as I read this next part.
Okay.
So, Jones and his childhood friend both claimed that Jones's father was associated with the KKK. And this led to a lot of disagreements between him and Jones. Because even though Jones, you know, did the whole Hitler salute thing, he apparently got into a lot of fights with his father and eventually ended up cutting contact with him because his father was an ultra-racist KKK member. But this was later on in his teen years. So I'm guessing it was possible maybe he was influenced by his dad to kind of hold these racist beliefs.
I mean,
I don't know.
Imagine the KKK and Nazis having a disagreement. Like, in what world does that exist?
Yeah, I don't know.
All right, well, that's okay.
Right, so pretty weird, which is because, like, obviously, you would kind of think, like, you know, if he, well, it said he was a kid, so who knows, but if he supported Nazism, then you would think that he would kind of, you know, be okay with racism and discrimination, so it's kind of weird. But something must have happened.
Maybe he just hated Jews.
That could be. That could be.
Okay. Nazis hated Jews. Okay. And, you know, Jim Jones, Nazi salute, Hail Hitler, hated Jews.
True.
Now, his dad being a KKK member, hating black people, right?
Right.
Now he was like, oh, now hold on. You can, like, we hate Jews, not blacks.
Maybe. That could be. I don't know.
What a weird argument to get into.
Right.
Well, I'm prejudiced against this group.
I found this very weird. Like I said, kind of contradictory. So anyways, moving on to my next point. So I'm just kind of going through his life here. So that was in his teen years. He started fighting with his KKK dad about being racist. Fuck you, dad. You're racist. I'm moving in with my mom.
Right.
So in his later high school years, he ended up moving in with his mom. I guess his parents were separated. And after high school, he started working at this hospital, Richmond's Reed Hospital. Apparently, he was well-regarded by senior management. However, his staff members later recalled Jones exhibiting disturbing behavior. One former coworker of Jones, with whom he had been childhood friends with also, recalled an incident where Jones manhandled a patient while dry shaving him, resulting in the patient's injury with a straight razor. So this was in his early adulthood, right? I don't know exactly what year, but so he went through his childhood, his teen years fighting with his dad, and then now in his early adulthood in the working world, he's cutting up patients and shit.
Jesus.
Uh-huh. So then, in 1952, he became a student pastor at Somerset Southside Methodist Church. But later he claimed that he left this church because leaders forbade him from integrating black people into his congregation. So, clearly, as he's trying to portray, he's very against racism and segregation and things like that.
Okay.
Around this time, Jones witnessed a faith-healing service at the Seventh-day Baptist Church. He observed that it attracted people and their money and concluded that he could accomplish his social goals with financial resources from such services. So in my reading, I read that he was very against segregation and he was very much so about, integrating black and white people into the same churches and same buildings and things like that.
Well, they set up in such a like, where did the suicide happen? Was that in like Brazil?
Yeah.
Okay.
Guyana.
So in Guyana, Brazil, that's really, yeah. So that, to me, I always thought that, like, that you know, made sense that he was all about inclusion because he set up shop in such, like, you know, a Hispanic country.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's,
okay. That kind of led into that, how he ended up down there, and I'll talk about that also.
Okay.
But, I will say, before I go any further, I do think a lot of his progressiveness is all fake.
Well, I mean, imagine being a cult leader and you're progressive. You know what I mean?
That's what I'm saying.
Imagine calling yourself that.
Right. Well,
listen, I want all people of all races to commit suicide.
Exactly.
With me. Yeah.
But exactly. That was the whole thing.
Dude, these colleagues, man, what a freaking whack job.
I feel like,
bro,
this was like a sociopathic tendency of his where he pretended like he cared about people. Yeah. He cared about ending racism and all these things. But really, it was just all to try to get people to follow him. And there's more like incidences of that. So, like I said, he went to the Seventh-day Baptist Church. He observed a healing there that attracted people and their money. He was very interested by that. And then he apparently attended this convention in 1956. He was probably like, I don't know, later 20s by then.
Okay.
He went to this convention, this religious convention. I didn't read much about it, but whatever. He went to this convention, and after this, he was able to begin his own church, which had various names. It first started as the People's Temple Christian Church, Full Gospel, but then it was shortened to the People's Temple, which is how that his church got the name. So, another quick little tidbit. Apparently, according to his acquaintances, Jones was known to regularly study Adolf Hitler, to learn how to manipulate members of the People's Temple. He had this like saying or theory where he was told to find an enemy. I'm getting a little tipsy. I'm like Nemo.
Anemone.
Find an enemy and to make sure they know who the enemy is, as it will unify those in a group and make them subservient to him. So I guess it was like a saying that he like started to abide by or something like that.
Okay.
So then, you know, his church began gaining traction because, you know, he had all these progressive beliefs apparently about, like I said, desegregating the churches and this and that. Everybody's welcome. And because of that, that's what started, like, you know, his popularity, because that was going against the grain at the time. Obviously, he was in Indiana, very racist, very segregated.
Yeah.
Like that at this time.
What is it? Okay. I think what is the town called? Crete? Is that how you pronounce it? Crete, Indiana?
I believe so.
Okay. Like concrete?
I don't know exactly, but.
Hold on. Well, go ahead. Like, keep going. I'm going to look up where Crete is, if it's like in like a pretty rural area, which I know what is, but I want to see like
where,
like how, like nowadays where it ends up.
And by the way, so that quote that I was talking about where it's like find an enemy and make sure they know who the enemy is, blah, blah, blah. Obviously his church congregation didn't know that he, you know, like was into that quote or something like that. It was like another pastor or somebody high up in the church that like knew about this.
Okay. So for everyone listening, I just looked up where Crete, Indiana is. So it's like about 50 miles west of Indianapolis, and it's like it's right on the border of Ohio and Indiana. So yeah, and even just looking at it from like an aerial view, like it's like dead in the middle of nowhere, dude. There's nothing here. Like it's tiny. So yeah, this is definitely like a rural area, like she had said.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So basically during this time, long story short, his church was gaining a lot of traction in Indiana, but it was also facing a lot of criticism because like I said, he was trying to desegregate churches and integrate everybody. And obviously in the area that he was in, that was very, like I said, against the grain. So his church was thriving, gaining members, so on and so forth. And then, in 1962, so this is
east, by the way, 50 miles east. I'm sorry. I had to correct myself. Go ahead.
Oh,
I'm
yeah, so yeah. Sorry. Oh, yeah. I didn't realize that till now. So, yeah, his church is thriving. And about 5-6 years later, Jones traveled with his family to Brazil with the idea of setting up a new temple location. I'm guessing this has something to do with just the whole Christianity thing of spreading the gospel.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming
which is a pretty common theme amongst like Christian based cults.
Yeah.
It's all about spreading their gospel. It always in the most radical form, too.
Exactly. And not even just in Christian cults, but even just, like, I used to be a big member of church for a while. And, I mean, like, people always were talking about doing missions trip and things like that. And they say it's not to do that, but, like, it is.
Yeah.
It is. So it's very, it's part of, like, Christian cults, definitely, but also just regular Christian culture, I would say. So they go to Brazil with the idea of setting up a new temple location. And the reason that he also wanted to go there, so part of it was, like, you know, to spread the gospel. But the other part of it is that Jones was a big conspiracy theorist, and he had read this article about how there was projected a nuclear war about to happen. And apparently the town that he went to in Brazil was like a safe haven. So the reason he went there is because he believed that nuclear war was eventually going to break out, and he wanted to be in the safe haven location when that happened, while also setting up a new church.
Okay. Hold on. So how many members at this point does he have?
I don't know, actually. I don't know. I didn't find that in my research.
It's not very documented how many he had.
No.
But we know the final number at the end of, like, that whole run is about around 1,000, presumably, because, yeah. You know, that's maybe. I've seen, because it got news coverage, and there was, like, you know, whatever. And I've seen pictures and videos of it. Dude, it's insane. It's very haunting.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's very haunting because it's religious photos and, like, an aerial view of, like, this field full of dead people.
Oh, God, I haven't seen that.
It's very haunting.
I don't want to. I didn't look at pictures on purpose.
I would say, I'm not saying you should, but I'm saying if you want the most, like, I don't know, jarring experience, just watch a video, look at a picture with no, like, audio, no noise.
Yeah.
Like, no news anchor commentary, none of that. Just watch the video, look the aerial, like, helicopter video of them, just a feel full of, like, dead people. It's very weird.
Yeah. Oh, my God, I bet. I can only imagine.
It's very haunting, yeah. So.
So, yeah, he was fearful of, you know, a nuclear war. I think I read something about how, you know, this was in the 1960s at this point, and there was a lot of civil unrest during this time, of course. And also there always has been talks of World War III. So I think, you know, he just kind of fell into a lot of conspiracies and things regarding that. So, yeah, went to Brazil as a way to build a little church and, you know, have the safe haven location. While in Brazil, so he was in a different town. It was called Belo Horizonte, I believe. While he was there,
that was the most, like, white pronunciation too.
Probably. I mean, I took Spanish for 3 years. I know how to say it, but I just don't want to sound stupid.
All right. Why don't you give it a try?
No. Because right. People are going to laugh at me. That's why I said it, like, in a white way.
All right. Moving on.
So anyways, while in Brazil, he made his first trip to Guyana. And while he was there in Brazil, he did a lot of studying of the local economy and receptiveness to racial minorities to his messages while in Brazil. Mm-hmm. So he was kind of testing the waters while he was there to kind of see how the people there would receive his message. And he started gaining a lot of traction there because, like I said, while he was in Indiana, he was very against racism and things like that and preached that in his messages and things like that. So, of course, the people down there were like, hell yeah, we could get down with this.
Right.
That makes sense. Because they were also at this time, Guyana was colonized by Great Britain, I believe.
Right.
So, yeah, you could understand why they would be receptive to that message. So he was living in Brazil for a couple years, and then his associate preachers in Indiana told him that the temple back in Indiana was getting ready to collapse. It was falling apart without him, apparently. So he actually ended up returning back to Indiana to his original church location.
Okay.
He returned in December of 1963. So I believe he only lived in Brazil for about a year at this point. And he went back and told his Indiana congregation that the world would be engulfed by nuclear war on July 15th, 1967. And the only way to escape that would be to move to Northern California for safety.
Okay.
I don't know where he got that from.
If I'm breaking this down, from like a bullshit scale, right?
Mm-hmm.
Listen, he's not being that outrageous.
You don't think so?
Not necessarily. I think that there's like a little bit more. Well, I guess that's the whole purpose of a cult, is that you exploit some level of, like, you know, societal fear.
Sure.
And then people will obviously rally behind you.
Something that,
like Waco, you know, Heaven's Gate, whatever else. But yeah, so realistically, and for whatever reason, like the 60s and 70s, dude, more specifically at the Vietnam era.
Yeah.
That's where, like, you experience, like, the weirdest forms of real life, like, humanity.
Oh, yeah.
Think of, like the serial killer surge that went on, like, the cult surge now, with, like, you know, you had, I think Waco was in the 70s, if I'm not mistaken, Charles Manson. And the Manson family. Yeah. So, like, all these different things. Right around when I think that, you know, the CIA was kind of, you know, doing MKUltra, that's when, like, all these cults just started popping up. You're like, that's definitely got some correlation to it.
Right. So, yeah, that's exactly what I mean. There was a lot going on at that time that I guess, you know, the belief that World War III or nuclear war could break out, I guess people still believe that today. You know what I'm saying?
Well, it's not, I don't even think it's a matter of if. So I think it's just a matter of when. I really do think that.
Yeah, and a lot of people believe that. And it was just, I mean, every time there's a lot of catastrophic events in the world, people start, World War III is going to happen.
Right.
So this was just another case of that, but back in the 60s.
Well, the 60s for sure, because it was the height of the Cold War, and, you know.
Yes,
and the
exactly.
And the Bay of Pigs invasion had happened, and, you know, And the U.S. and Russia, where they were just, you know, back and forth trying to place, you know, nuclear missiles, like, in neutral. Think of the, what was it? Think of the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Yeah.
If Russia would have crossed the embargo line that with, like, their nuclear missiles, because they were trying to put missiles in Cuba, because they would have, you know, they could launch missiles from Cuba to attack the United States. The United States early, you know, their weapons warning system would have kicked in. They could easily target Miami. They could easily target, like, New Orleans, things like that.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, people were definitely on edge.
Oh, 100%.
They had fallout drills in schools. They people built fallout shelters in federal buildings. Like, it was like a serious thing.
I remember we were talking, I think, in another episode how at McKinley, that school was built in the 1940s, and there's bomb shelters in there,
exactly,
because people were worried.
Most post offices around the country have fallout shelters inside them from the Cold War.
Yep, so very believable. So, yeah, he very much so bought into that, convinced his church members that it would happen, and for whatever reason, I couldn't find why, they felt as though they had to move their church to California, specifically like the San Francisco-ish area. Actually, they had a couple different locations, but that was one prominent
mainly California?
Yeah.
Okay.
He had one in San Francisco, Los Angeles, and there was a third place in California. So they were all in California.
Okay.
But basically, so yeah. He convinced everybody that they have to move their church to California. For whatever reason, that was a safe place. So then he was preaching out in California, but that's when shit started to get culty. Before that, like I said, like we were kind of just mentioning, you could kind of get into his message. He's anti-racism, very progressive, and he also talked a lot about socialism. And having sort of this utopia-like world where everybody takes care of each other and all these things. So, you know, it was pretty easy to buy into his messages at that time because sounds great in theory, right? So like I said, by the 1970s, shit started getting culty. Jones began deriding away from Christianity he began saying it was a flyaway religion. He rejected the Bible as a tool for faith or whatever, and said that it was actually used to oppress women and non-whites, and he denounced God as a sky god, who was in fact no god at all. So he went from a Christian preacher to, like, denouncing the Bible and God and everything.
Well, he had to roll people in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So at this time, like I said, I don't know how many people were following him, but I imagine if he was able to move his church to California and have different locations, it was probably getting pretty big.
I mean, if the end result was 1,000, that's a pretty significant amount to follow, like, a cult.
Yeah.
I can't think of, I'm trying to think of how many people were involved in Waco. I don't remember off the top of my head, but 1,000 seems like a lot.
Yeah.
It seems like a lot for like a group of that size to be moving around all these different locations.
Oh, yeah.
And then especially at one point, Brazil, where it all went down. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And especially in a time, you know, when there's no like social media and things like that.
And even like, yeah, exactly. So, you know, computers aren't even around yet. So that's, how do you keep track of that many people?
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's exactly.
A lot. So.
And then my next bullet point here in my note says, so within 5 years of moving to California, the temple experienced a period of exponential growth, and they opened, this is why I was thinking that earlier. They opened branches in cities including San Fernando, San Francisco, and Los Angeles. So they moved to California, and they were opening up all these different branches.
Okay.
So this was in the 1970s, 5 years of exponential growth and fucky shit. And then in the summer of 1977, Jones and several hundred followers abruptly decided to move to the temple's communal settlement in Guyana, officially called the People's Temple Agricultural Project, but informally known as Jonestown, after they learned that their temple was facing allegations of physical, emotional, and sexual assault by temple leaders. So,
wow.
The church was growing rapidly, and while in California, people started to kind of poke holes into this church's ideologies and things like that. And there was a lot of, information coming out about different forms of abuse. There was a lot of different reports coming out criticizing Jim Jones and the church as a whole. Basically, they were just facing a lot of criticism. And so that is pretty much what prompted their move to Guyana on top of the whole fear of nuclear war.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Well, yeah. The fact that, okay, so this is what always has jarred me. And obviously, hindsight's 2020, right?
Mm-hmm.
So obviously we could, I like to think that people nowadays could spot a cult from like a million miles away, right?
Like you would think,
but the thing is like, this has happened like the 60s and 70s, right? This is like right around when cults are starting to pop up. So the people's level of like influence, like you said, there was no internet back then.
Exactly.
There weren't any other examples of like this. And especially when, you know, I think people who are kind of spiritually lost,
mm-hmm.
they're way more susceptible for two people like Jim Jones or, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, and David Koresh and, you know, Charles Manson. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And we can say those examples out loud and know that, oh, that's what happens when it goes off the handle. And you think you're meeting for a study group. Sure. And all of a sudden, you're fighting off the FBI.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like, okay, there's, looking back, there's definitely parts you're like, well, maybe you could tell, like, things went off the deep end pretty quick.
Right.
But for these people in the moment, no, they're just, they, for some reason, they feel lost.
Yeah.
No, Jim Jones, he's like their savior, their prophet, their
right.
The person who's going to lead them out of, you know, like World War III and like all this other thing. So, yeah.
For sure.
So I've kind of changed my tune where nowadays you get sucked into a cult. Okay. It's like, how?
There's so much information out there. Like, you should be able to know better. Like, but at this time.
Well, okay. Well, or at the very least, okay, so you stop believing the whole brainwashing thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, okay, now in modern day, it's no longer you just saying, like, this guy's rallying people behind this crazy religious ideology. Mm-hmm. Now it's like, these people know that, like, it's, you know, nuts, but these people are just as nuts as the leader is.
Yes, so like, absolutely. Like,
what was it? Well, I don't want to say famous because I don't know how famous he really was, but for everyone listening, the actress who plays Chloe in Smallville, right? Smallville was like a TV show about Superman on the CW in like the early 2000s. I can't think of anything else she's been in. That's all I can think of is that she was on Smallville, pretty big role. But anyway, so her being in Hollywood, having like this major TV role, she got arrested just recently because she was in a cult that whole time. She was like a recruiter for them or some shit.
Oh my God.
She's part of a sex cult. Yeah.
Oof. Yikes.
So, you know, even then. Now, these people who are, well, that's the thing. So the leader and these higher-ups, these, like, I guess if you want to call them cult officials, right? They all know, like, the act, right? Either they know that it's BS and they're, you know, they're just trying to, you know, get a rise out of you, or like, you know, trying to pull a fast one on you, or they're so delusional in their own, you know, bubble that they really do believe what they're preaching, right? Mm-hmm. Now, the people underneath them who were like the followers, like the, I would say, bottom of like the totem pole. I just, with how many examples there are nowadays, like, you know, in 2021, it's like, how did, at this point, how do you just not see the red flags?
I know, right?
You know what I mean? And it's like, oh, we're going to hang out at my house for a book club. Okay, cool. Oh, but while we're here, we're going to start, there's going to be a bunch of girls and guys that come over that are kind of, you know, employees of ours. We're just going to bang them. Seems normal to me. Bring them on in here.
Yeah, right?
Do they pay taxes? No, they don't pay taxes, but... I just don't understand how now in today's society, how you could possibly get roped into a cult. I really don't get it.
Well, I mean, like, okay, I don't know if it's okay to go there or not, but it's like...
If you've ever been in a cult, write in.
Yeah, please.
Yeah, I really want to know, yeah.
But, like, how many people out there believe that Trump is still the president?
That's true.
Shit like that. You know what I mean? Like, there's a very large proportion of people who still think things like that based off of nothing now, significant.
I don't want to get political in this podcast.
Right, no, I don't want to either, but that was just like a modern day example. But yeah,
I've heard that too, where people think that, like, you know, I've even heard that, like, people think that, like, Ronald Reagan's still alive.
And I'm like, oh my God.
And I'm like, even if that was true, it was like, even if he didn't, you know, die of whatever, he would be so old.
Right.
Same thing with, like, Tupac.
Yes.
Tupac's in Cuba, which he is, by the way, confirmed. Tupac, like every dead rapper or like musician just lives in Cuba. Like, what's so, like, it kind of makes you want to go there now, because like apparently all, like, that's where people are hiding out at. But
yeah, right. Okay, so to get more into the fucky shit about Jonestown, this is where shit gets dark. So, like I said, in the summer of 1977, that's when Jim Jones led his church down to Guyana. Then. In 1978, a U.S. representative named Leo Ryan actually had gone down to Jonestown to start investigating claims of abuse that were first alleged whilst they were still in the United States.
Okay.
So he went down to investigate everything, and I read some conflicting things on this. I read one thing that said that they welcomed him initially. They taught him the teachings of Jonestown and basically kind of tried to convince him, like, see, it's no big deal. There's no abuse here. We support, you know, everybody here, things like that.
Right.
But then I read that that wasn't true and that he was immediately met with hostility and things like that. So I don't exactly know. But what I do know is that he ended up being murdered along with four members of his delegation that had come with him to investigate this.
Oh, my God.
Uh-huh.
Wow. Imagine how awkward that would be.
Yep. So now this is where I don't really know, because I also read conflicting things. I don't know if like a shootout had ended up happening or not. I honestly could not find much on this at all for some reason. But all I know is that after they had shot the U.S. representative, that's when Jim Jones basically ordered everybody to ingest poison-laced punch while armed guards stood by. And that punch was filled with cyanide. And that's essentially how he had gotten 918 people to commit suicide.
I can't even, like, think about that number in your head. This guy just somehow convinced people to 918 people to commit suicide with the killer Kool-Aid, is right. Like to call it.
And that's the most interesting part, but that's the part that I found, like, the fewest details about, is how did that... Was he like, okay, everybody, drink up? Or was he like, okay, we gotta go?
Well,
like,
because he himself died.
Oh, did he?
I think he was the one, if I'm not mistaken, he was also the one who took, he ingested it as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I knew that, but did he, like, drink it first and then everybody else followed? Or was he like, cheers?
He was like, he did, you guys can't see this, but he did one of these. He was like, raised his glass in the air and he goes like, cheers. And he like went, he did like the whole like drink fake out and
shots,
everyone else.
Shots.
He went like this. And everyone else already done it, and he was like, oh.
Gotcha.
And then he goes, well, everyone else is dead, so.
Yeah.
Down the hatch, but.
That I don't exactly know, and I want to read more and watch more videos on, like I said, I just found so many different things in my research, but I was primarily focused on, like I said, how he got from point A to point B. Like, how did this normal man become a cult leader?
Yeah, because it's like, it's, you know, for, I don't, you know, you either agree or disagree, but. That isn't something people just normally become as cult leaders.
Exactly. But yeah, so I'm guessing that, you know, part of the reason he wanted people, or he maybe directed people to drink that cyanide punch was because, like, after killing a U.S. representative, of course something was going to happen after that.
Yeah, but, I mean, you went out with a bang.
Oh, holy absolutely. Crap.
Like, you didn't get arrested. You didn't, you know, you didn't have, you know, military authority show up in your compound. You gave the last middle finger to society, and you all just went out on your own accord.
Oh, right? I know. That's what's crazy to me is, like, they were literally, everybody was just like, all right, fuck this, I'm out.
Yeah, but the fact that, like, so many people were like, okay, yeah, I'm cool with that. Let's kill ourselves.
I just read something fucking crazy on Wikipedia regarding this.
Well, you gotta read it now.
Following the mass murder-suicide, Jones was found dead at the stage of the Central Pavilion. He was resting on a pillow near his deck chair with a gunshot wound to his head.
Oh, he shot himself in the head?
Yep. It says the coroner that investigated him said it was consistent with suicide. So he didn't drink the punch. He shot himself.
I always thought he drank the punch with everybody else.
Right, you would think. Everybody else drank the poison and then he shot himself.
Well, I mean, yeah, he killed a U.S. official. Yeah, I mean, like, what do you... He's like, I'm not going to go to jail.
You yeah. know what
I mean? So he's like, nah, dude, I'm going out. Holy crap.
It says that there was levels of cyanide in his blood as well. But obviously what killed him was the gunshot. So I think maybe he did drink it as well, but...
Maybe he'll drink a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I'm guessing, I don't know what it's like to be poisoned with cyanide, but I'm guessing that, you know, shooting yourself in the head is a lot quicker and less painless.
I mean...
Death.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Maybe he... I mean, okay, so there were trace amounts of cyanide in his system, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that... Let's say that he raised the toast with everybody else, right? Presumably. Now, this is so dumb because I feel like it wasn't actually true. He tipped his glass enough to fake out him drinking it. And it'd be like, it touched his lips. But he didn't actually ingest any.
Yeah.
But the droplets got in the system and like he absorbed it. Maybe. I don't know. It just kind of seems odd that you would drink the whole cup of cyanide, not die, and then shoot yourself in the head.
Right. There is a rumor that apparently somebody else shot him, but it's not really widely believed because, like, the wound was dead center in the middle of his forehead. Like, somebody would have to have perfect aim to have gotten that.
But why would he have shot... Why would he have aimed the gun like that? That's kind of weird.
I don't know. I feel like maybe he just... Well, if somebody... Okay, this... I don't know if this is morbid, but if somebody's going to shoot themselves in the head, they're probably going to go...
Into the temple.
No, I don't know, maybe...
No, what? No,
that's what he thought, I guess.
That's for... What I think of, like, a death by suicide with a gun is you put it up to your temple, because it's like... Because this is a natural motion, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like, wrist and elbow to... That's weird to say. But, like this is, like... It's not out of your range of mobility to put a gun to your head, right? But to turn your arm awkwardly and do like this, like, even doing that, like, I'm rotating my shoulder in a way where that just feels awkward and weird.
I agree, but at the same time, it's like, okay, well, now we live in a world where suicide is a lot more common and things like that, so it's like thinking of, oh, I'll just shoot myself in the temple is whatever.
But to point the gun completely forward at, like, dead center of your head is just, it's just very odd.
It is.
Unless he did it with both hands and went like this, like, into the front, which... Again, that just seems odd. So I would think that, like, either temple, maybe underneath the jaw, or, like, in your mouth is what I've always, you know.
Right. Who knows? I mean, granted, who knows if any of this is true. But apparently it was just said from what I read now that he had, like, a gunshot wound pretty much in the center of his forehead.
Are there any other theories behind Jonestown or anything?
I don't really know of any off the top of my head. I'm kind of trying to look right now. But what I said is pretty much all I know.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, I wasn't really very versed in the subject. I knew that, like, you know, Jim Jones had, like, this cult in Brazil, and, like, he had convinced all these people to take, like, this, like, you know, cyanide-laced Kool-Aid, which in, you know, and also I saw the videos of, like, just the field of, like, dead bodies, that is just crazy to me.
I just read right here that the FBI later recovered a 45-minute audio recording of the mass poisoning in progress.
No, really?
Ugh, that's awful.
I kind of want to, I want to watch it or listen to it.
Well, the cyanide, like, make people, like, I imagine it would make you, like, throw up and, like.
I don't know. I think it's supposed to be, I think it's supposed to be relatively pretty quick.
Oh, really? I don't know shit about that. But I'm just wondering, like, were people suffering for, you know,
no, I don't
a
think
long amount of time?
I don't think that's how it works. Because I think that, like, a lot of, especially, like, the Cold War, a lot of CIA operatives, they, what they would do is when they're out in, like, the field, like, performing espionage, they would have, like, capsules in, like, a false tooth of theirs. Hmm. So all they'd have to do is, in case they got captured, instead of releasing information, they would bite down and it would kill them. It would release
the cap.
Yeah, so I think it's supposed to be pretty quick. I think that's the whole point of cyanide, is that it's quick.
Okay. Well, maybe it just, I imagine, you know, for it to, for 918 people to do it, it probably took a while to convince everybody. So maybe that's why it was 45 minutes long.
Or could you imagine if he just tricked, like not like they knew they were killing themselves. He just straight up tricked all of them.
Oh my God.
Like, it was just straight up just laced. Like, it wasn't even like, okay, guys, we're going to kill ourselves now. No, it was just like, he just put cyanide in the whole pitcher. I was like, oh, you get a drink.
Who fucking
you
made drink. That shit?
Oh, dude,
making some
know.
Cyanide Kool-Aid.
I wonder what flavor it was.
Yeah, right? Okay, so I'm trying to read more now. So remember how, okay, so it was a U.S. representative, obviously, that came to investigate them.
Right.
And that only furthered Jim Jones, you know, conspiracy mindset, and that people are after him, that a nuclear war is going to happen. Because when, you know, in church, there's a very widespread belief that, like, Christians are persecuted. And so he, in moving to Guyana, part of that was, you know, he felt like he was being persecuted in the United States for, you know, spreading the truth. And that's why people were trying to, you know, say that there was abuse happening in the church and this and that. So I'm reading now that on the tape, you know, the audio recording of the mass poisoning happening, in that tape, Jones tells the temple members that the Soviet Union, with whom the temple had been negotiating a potential exodus with for months, would not give them a passage after the airstrip shooting. After they shot the representative. So I guess that they had believed that the Soviet Union was going to save them from...
It was going to allow them to, like, defect?
I guess.
Huh.
Like, basically, I guess their belief from what it sounds like is the Soviet Union was going to save them from, like, the U.S. embargo on them or whatever.
Yeah, maybe we'll listen to the audio recording and we'll put bits in the episode.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty interesting. Yeah, well, we'll take a gander and we'll see, but... Yeah.
He believed that intelligence organizations were conspiring against the temple, and that Med would eventually parachute in here on us, shoot some of our innocent babies, they'll torture our children, they'll torture some of our people here, they'll torture our seniors. And this is what he was telling all them as he was, you know, trying to get them to drink the cyanide.
Okay.
I
mean, by all accounts, he seems pretty convincing.
Yeah.
He might trick me. If I was having a bad day.
Do you think you would have been a part of his church?
In the 60s, if I was, like, depressed, lost, blah, 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 I don't think it's outside the... Well, I mean, he convinced, like, 1,000 other people. I don't think it's outside the realm of possibility.
Right.
So,
like you said, it sounded really convincing at first. Like, you're talking about anti-racism and all these progressive ideals and living in a socialist utopia, you know, society and everything. Like,
exactly.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds great.
Yeah, exactly.
But... Obviously, I feel like I said, when his whole anti-racism thing and all his progressive ideals, that's why I believe it was all obviously fake. You know, he just wanted to get people to follow him.
Right. Wow. Well, I think it's a pretty good spot to end it.
Yeah. So that was pretty much it.
All right. Well, thank you guys for listening about our episode about, you know, the infamous Jonestown. You know, we're probably gonna explore other cults in later episodes, so we'll be on the lookout for that. But I want to say thank you to everyone for listening, and this has been Strange Reality. So, I'm not gonna do the whole spooky thing again. You know, yeah. Have a spooky rest of your day.
It was grape Kool-Aid, by the way.
It was grape?
Yeah, from what I'm reading now.
All right, we're definitely ending it right then.
All right, see you later.
Bye, grape Kool-Aid. Woo!
Strange Reality.